Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, January 15th, 2012, and this is show number 348. Well, we're 2 weeks away from Macworld iWorld, and I think I may actually just about be ready for my blinded tech talk. If you're coming to the show, I really hope you can come see it and cheer me on. It's at 11 a.m. on Thursday. This has been a fascinating journey filled with equal doses of hope and complete and utter discouragement and disappointment. 2 weeks ago, I was pretty fearful that I would never get the hang of it, but then my blind friends came to my rescue and pretty much helped me get over the hump. It was such an exhilarating feeling when suddenly I felt I was able to actually experiment and explore with my eyes closed, rather than being filled with dread and terror whenever I practiced my rudimentary script. One funny thing has come out of this. The same guys who were all full of encouragement and said things like, "Oh, it's easy, Allison." Yeah, they're now coming out of the woodwork saying things like, "Oh man, you are so brave to do this." I guess I'm glad they didn't tell me ahead of time how hard it was, because I'd have never tried it if I'd heard how hard it was to start with. Now I'm excited and I'm really looking forward to it. A lot of people have asked if it's going to be recorded, and I assure you Steve will be videotaping, or what's it called, video disking? Anyway, he will record the entire thing on video for sure. Now, we've also worked on audio to make sure you'll be able to hear everything and see the demonstration as well. One tricky bit was how to get the audio from the iPhone into the microphone for the recording and for the room audio. Steve will be using his remote mic rig, where he has a receiver plugged into the hot shoe of his camcorder, and I have a remote mic hooked to a transmitter that I keep with me on stage. We'll set that right beside the room audio mic. That's the way we did this stuff at Blogworld. The problem with the iPhone, though, is that it's very, very quiet. It's very important that you be able to hear it when I'm using VoiceOver, right? And when it's held naturally in my hands, it's actually 90 degrees from the input of the microphones, so it's pretty much zero. You can't hear it at all. We noodled this for a bit, and then we realized we could use his new Jambone Jambox. If you haven't seen one of these, it's really cool. It's a very, very small wireless speaker. It's about 6 inches long and 2 inches square, and it has amazing sound. According to the website, it goes up to 85 dB, and they say that's more than the volume of sound of a motorcycle, but less than a rock concert. I haven't pushed it that far, but at least there's no question we can make it loud enough. Now, it works over Bluetooth, and Steve's been loving using it with his iPhone, but while he was able to pair it just fine, I had a lot of trouble with that. And then we started thinking it'd be kind of a mess to switch the pairing from the iPhone over to the Mac, because we also have to get it on that. So we decided we're just going to use the included audio cable. This has been a great solution, and as long as I can keep the Mac and the iPhone next to each other on stage, it should work. Fingers and toes crossed on this. By the way, if you are coming to Macworld and you haven't yet signed up for the NoCilla Castaways party on Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m., be sure to head on over to podfeet.com and click on the link in the menu bar for the NoCilla Castaways party and enter the password ScreenSteps, all lowercase. We are going to be taking roll. I have assigned bouncers that are going to be taking over for this for the cost of a few beers. It looks like we can get some big guys to keep the party crashers from coming in this year. Anyway, be sure to head on over there and register for the event so that we know you're coming and we can size the food appropriately. Looks like we have about 50% more people than last year, so it is going to be a lot of fun. I hope to see you there. At the end of last week's live show, when I finished doing the whole recording, I told GarageBand to export the uncompressed file. That's what I always do, right? I still had the live audience with me, and they saw me cringe when GarageBand said I didn't have enough disk space to let the automatic normalization be performed on export. What? In case you missed it, I have a 750-gig spinning hard drive named Fatso and a 60-gig SSD named Speedy in my MacBook Pro. I have my operating system and applications on the SSD with all the data, like these giant recording files, sitting on the hard drive. So I checked my hard drive, Fatso, and I had like 350 gigabytes free. I thought that ought to be enough. I mean, the file's like 750 megabytes when it's exported from GarageBand uncompressed. At this point, I started figuring maybe GarageBand stores some sort of temp files on Speedy while it's doing the normalization. I checked available disk space on Speedy, and somehow my available space out of the 60 gig had shrunk to around 4 gigabytes. Last time I checked, I had like 25 gigabytes free. What the heck was going on? I was fairly panicked. The error said I should shut off the auto normalizing, and when I did that, it exported just fine. I always run my uncompressed audio files, AIFFs, through the Levelator anyway. It's a free tool from the Conversations Network that does really good audio normalization. I left the live audience at that point because I figured the crisis was averted, but I still had the low disk space problem. Now, Kyle's been eyeing my solid-state drive anyway, and I figured I'd just get a 128-gig drive, give him the 60-gig, and we'd both be happier. After I got off the air, I ran Levelator, but it also failed for the same reason. So I figured it was time to do some rugged spring cleaning of my applications folder. I whipped out my trusty App Delete from ReggieAshworth.com. App Delete is one of my favorite applications. It deletes applications and takes along all the cruft an app can leave behind. I love the interface because it shows you in a beautiful heads-up display all of the files it's found before you actually hit delete. Sometimes you don't need to know necessarily what's in there, but it's always fun to see all this glop get carried out with the trash. I deleted about 20 applications, getting my stash down to a meager 128 apps. It was a massacre, I tell you. Well, this got me up to a whopping 5 gigabytes free. Well, that was enough disk space to form the levelization step, but clearly something was still chewing up my disk. Next up, I opened Omni Disk Sweeper, another free application, this time from the Omni Group. I vacillate between Disk Inventory X and Omni Disk Sweeper to clean up my drive. The former, Disk Inventory X, is prettier, but the latter is much faster. I was in no mood to be entertained. I wanted to know where my disk had run off to fast. I fully expected Omni Disk Sweeper to show my applications folder at the top when it was done sweeping, since it was sure to be taking up the most space. That's usually the top folder. Imagine my surprise, though, when a folder called Private was on top, with 22 gigabytes of data. I drilled down in there to /private/var/tmp, and in there I found more than a dozen AIFF files, most of which were copies of the December 23rd podcast. I noodled this for a bit, and then it dawned on me what was happening. Dorothy, also known as MacLurker, actually wrote a script for me, or I should say rewrote, a lovely script for me over the holidays that automates my workflow of all of the post-production steps of creating the podcast. In the script, she has to tell it to wait while the Levelator finishes its work, but we don't actually know how long it's going to take because it depends on how long the show is. At first, the script would move on to the next step before the levelization was complete, which evidently left the entire original audio source sitting in that temp directory, over and over and over again. The good news is that I figured it out. I was able to harvest enough disk space that I have around 16 gigabytes free now. And Dorothy has begged me to allow her to add some more to the script to have it clean up the temp directory too. So she's going to have a lot of fun with that. It's nice that I can keep her entertained, you know. As disconcerting as this was, it was really fun to learn things and figure it out. Now the bad news is that there are still over 22,000 files in that /var/private/var/temp folder, and they're taking up another 2 gigabytes. The odd thing is each file is only around like 112 kilobytes. They range, but there's a lot of them at 112 kilobytes. It was suggested, I think by Kirshen, that I run Onyx, which I did, and the files did not go away. Perhaps I didn't run it right, but I ran all the cleanup operations it suggested and rebooted. I should mention that these files have helpful titles like tmp.1995.tqsrhf, and about 95% of them were all created on September 3rd. I think I'll run them. I'll go ahead and nuke them as soon as I run a backup of Speedy, you know, just in case. During all of this, I ended up having some conversations with Reggie Ashworth of ReggieAshworth.com, the fine maker of App Delete. He suggested that it was time that we have a little giveaway. He has the regular App Delete, but he also has an application called App Delete Lite in the App Store. So he suggested that he wants to give away 5 copies of that application. Now, I want to tell you, there's some issues with the way App Delete can work with the Mac App Store. It will now allow you to actually delete applications directly. It used to just show you what you could delete, but it can't still delete applications that you have to enter a password to delete. But it's still a really cool application. I use it all the time when I just want to know, where's that stupid preference file I need to delete? I just drag the app onto App Delete Lite, and it shows me where all the preference files are so I can go nuke them so I can actually get an application running again properly. Anyway, here's the way the contest is going to work. I think I'll give you till, let's say, the week after Macworld. Let's see, Macworld is like the weekend of the 28th. Let's say by the 2nd of February, I want you to send me an email with app delete, that's all one word, space light, L-I-T-E, in the name, in the title of the email, in the subject, and that will enter you to win. So again, it's app delete space light in the title, and I'll make a smart folder. If you spell it wrong, if you spell light wrong, or you put a space between app and delete, it won't work. So I want you to get the name right, and then we'll give away 5 free copies. How does that sound? So that's February 2nd. I'm making a note here, and I'll do it on the show on the 5th of February.
Hello, Allison. This is Nightwise from the Nightcast. Just wanted to give you a quick call in regards to Bart's latest chit-chat across the pond about presenting in Keynote on the iPad. I heard Bart's recount about presenting with the iPad, and I must say I absolutely agree on using the iPad to deliver presentations. Me too. I too have been using Keynote on the iPad to give presentations at work, and people were very impressed, and it saves me the trouble of having to lug around my own little Mac. Hearing Bart's recount on how to get the Keynote files from his Mac onto the iPad almost made me cry. As good as the Apple products are that are out there, as so bad is the cloud solutions that Apple has thought up for the iWork suite. Come on, the iWork cloud service stuff, it's just bad. There is a much better way and a much faster way and a much more reliable way of getting the presentations on there. What you need is quite simple. First of all, make sure that all of the Keynote presentations that you want to use are in one folder on your Mac. Next, go to System Preferences and choose Sharing and choose the option Enable Remote Login. This will enable the SSH or Secure FTP server on your Mac. Next up, go over to the iPad. Make sure the iPad's on the same network and install the GoodReader application. If you haven't already downloaded it, get it. It's a useful tool. It's the Swiss Army knife. And one of the things that GoodReader does is connect to an SSH server. Remember, we just enabled SSH on your Mac. So all you need to do is choose the option Connect to Server, enter the IP address of your Mac, your username, and your password, and ta-da, there is the file structure of your Mac. Browse to the right folder where you have stored your Keynote files and click on the option Sync in the bottom of the GoodReader file, of the GoodReader screen. This will enable you to synchronize that folder from your Mac to your iPad via SSH. You can do this over the local network, and if you know your external IP address and have forwarded the correct ports, you can even do that across the internet from anywhere. What will happen is the folder will get synced down to your iPad with all of the Keynote presentations there that you want to use. Next up, choose the option Manage Files, select the Keynote that you want to open, and choose the option Open In. If you've installed Keynote on your iPad, the Keynote application will also show up as a possible candidate to open that Keynote file, and just click the Keynote application in the menu. What this will do is it will copy over the application or the Keynote presentation from the GoodReader application to Keynote, and you can start using it right away. It's that simple. Don't use the whole Apple cloudy stuff. Just trust your own connections. Use GoodReader, SSH connections, and of course, the remote login option on your Mac. It's great, works fast, and if you forward the right ports, it works from anywhere. Have fun. Bye.
Hey, Nightwise, this worked really, really well. Makes so much more sense than using the infant iCloud service. Maybe someday it will grow up into a useful tool, but for now, GoodReader and SSHing into my Mac on a local network is a lot easier. I'm not sure I'm daring enough to open a port for this, like you said, especially since my Mac is nearly always with me anyway. Here's one more interesting thing. When I went to use GoodReader, I realized it was gone from my iPad. I had downloaded it 100 years ago when it first came out, for free, by the way, but I didn't use it, so in a rare case of spring cleaning, I must have tossed it. I went to re-download it, and by the way, it's $4.99 now. Bummer! I didn't want to pay again. But then, as I stared at that money symbol, suddenly it turned into the words install. It looks like now if you already own something, it accesses that information and gives it right back to you. Very cool. I like that it showed me the price first, so I felt really good about it. By the way, Katie Floyd did a really cool explanation on Mac Power Users a while back where she explained how to download podcasts using Goodreader. Check it out. It's back on Mac Power Users 048. And of course, there's a link in the show notes. One of the great things about using Clarify and ScreenSteps from BlueMangoLearning.com is that you get to be a hero to the recipients of your quick tutorials or long-form instructional manuals. I'm still a huge fan of ScreenSteps, and at the same time, I'm using Clarify more and more for the quick little answer to questions people have. The second best thing about these tools is how you never have to answer the same question twice. When I first put Snow Leopard on my in-laws' computers, they called me when I was back home, asking me how they could get their printer icons back in the docks. Now, I have no idea why they wanted their printer icon in the dock when they weren't printing, but my mind is not to question why, just to help. I whipped open Clarify, took 3 screenshots, added a few annotations, and like a sentence or two for clarification. When it's that simple, I like to embed the instructions right into the email, not as a separate attachment. In Clarify, you can do this by going up to Edit, pull down to Copy Document to Clipboard. I chose Rich Text Format, and then I can just plop it right into the email. But even better, this week they wrote to me with the exact same question. I have no idea how they both managed to pull the printer icon off the dock, but they had. They did remember that I'd done a tutorial for them since they said, you know, really sorry, but we can't find the tutorial. But since I named my stuff really well, I was able to immediately find that tutorial and send it to them again. So I got twice the fun, twice the credit, twice the hero worship for only one time having to do the work. I told my mother-in-law that it actually made me really happy that I got to send it a second time. It made me feel useful. If you haven't tried Clarify for the quick tutorial or ScreenSteps for the long-form instructions, head on over to BlueMangoLearning.com and get a free download and prove to yourself it's as fun and useful as I claim. Be sure to let them know that you heard about it on the NoSillaCast.
Hi, Allison. This is Ken Wolf from Manhattan Repertory Theater in New York City with something I call Super Speed Project Management using iOS and Mac apps and Apple products, part one. What? But first, let's start with a problem that needs to be solved. Now, I run a little 43-seat theater on 42nd and 8th Avenue, a block down from where the New Year's ball is dropped every New Year's Eve. We produce about 100 plays a year, giving new and striving artists a chance to get their work produced in Times Square. Last August, I discovered that they were building a year-round Halloween haunt, bar, and tourist attraction directly under our theater. I went to management fearful of the sound problems, and they assured me that there would be no sound issues. Well, the haunt opened October 23rd, 2011, and the crazy horror sounds effectively broke my theater. It was impossible to do any work here. I went to management crazed out of my head, just nuts. Luckily, they were wonderfully responsive and did the right thing and found us a new space in the same building 3 floors up. So here is the problem that needs to be solved. We had to move our 43-seat theater up 3 floors. We had to redo the electric, the sound, rebuild the seating, and we had to do it fast. We had 20 more plays to put up last year and no theater to do it. Our reputation and thousands of dollars of ticket sales were at stake, and we had virtually no money budgeted for this move. We couldn't hire anyone to do it, and management didn't have the manpower. Basically, it was up to me and my partner and girlfriend, Jen. We had to teleport a theater. Man, this was so not fun. Following is part one, featuring some of the apps and the Apple products that were incredibly instrumental in teleporting a theater at super speed up 3 stories. I'm going to give a basic overview of some of the apps and devices I used and how I used them, and not go into too much detail, for if I did, this review would go on all day, and even now it's going to be in 2 parts. The most valuable iOS app that I used was an app called Simple Note from Codality Incorporated. Simple Note is a note-taking app which syncs with iPhones, iPads, and there's a universal native app for each. And it also syncs with Apple computers using a Mac application called Notational Velocity. Simple Note is so simple, hence the name. Press a button, add a note, or add to a note, close it, and it'll sync through Simple Note service to all of your devices. You can pin a note to the top of your note list, search, make tags, and do other really useful things. In Simple Note, I put all the information that I needed or might need to make this move fast. I put stage dimensions, names of equipment, phone numbers of the management's contractors, supplies we might need, everything. I used Simple Note as my place to put stuff that I knew would be easy for me to find at any time on any one of my devices. It was always there and it always worked. Great app. The next app, which was awesome in this process, was an iPad app called NoteShelf from Ramakrishna at fluidtouch.biz. NoteShelf is a drawing app, much like Penultimate, where you can sketch and doodle with your finger or with a stylus. It has great colors, many different pen strokes, wrist protection, and more. The best thing about NoteShelf is that all of your notebooks are stored on what looks like the iBooks app bookshelf, so it is really easy and sweet to find any particular notebook that you may have created. I use NoteShelf to sketch out our plan for the new space and what we needed to have happen with the walls and more. I then met with management. I opened up my iPad with my sketch, made any adjustments necessary with him, and then emailed him right then and there my sketch. Did I say NoteShelf also exports to email, among other places like Dropbox and Evernote? It's awesome. Awesome. Best drawing app on the iPad. The next device, which saved me hours of time, was my new iPhone 4S. Yes, I know there have been problems with Siri, and she is not so reliable at times when her server overloads, but for my purposes, Siri was my savior. One of the challenges with teleporting a theater was that we had to measure everything to ensure that it could fit into the new space. In my right hand, I held my tape measure. In my left, I held my iPhone opened to my theater measurement file in Simple Note. I would measure and then press the dictation button on Siri, and I would say something like, front riser width, 8 feet, 5 inches. And as she was connecting to a server, doing a little voice transcription, I was on to the next measurement. Boom. She transcribed it. Perfect. I did not have to type once. Siri almost perfectly did my voice transcription. Awesome. Awesome. And I saved an incredible amount of time. And in this case, it was all about speed. That's it for now. Next time, I'm going to talk about how I use PhotoStream to help me shop for important tools and equipment, the Mac and iOS task manager I used, the list manager I used for task managers and list managers are two very different things complementing each other. And finally, I'm going to talk about the joy of Google and the iOS Carpentry app, which saved my bum. And I will let you know how fast we teleported our theater.
Wow, Ken, that is an amazing effort. I can't believe you didn't lose your mind. Many people, including me, have been looking for the best note-taking app, so now I've got to give NoteShelf a shot, too. I've tested so many of these, and none of them end up really replacing paper for me. I still grab some scratch paper to sketch things out, no matter how many apps and styluses I buy. I have a big problem at work, though. They've enforced double-sided printing, so now I'm not going to be able to dumpster dive and get all that scratch paper, so maybe I'm going to have to give NoteShelf a shot. Anyway, I can't wait to hear part two. This week, my good friend David Roth turned me onto a really cool tool called Mac Hash. It's a news aggregator focused on Mac news and podcasts. It's an interesting angle, I think, to combine text and podcasts into one tool. First, there's a website at machash.com where you can read your Mac news. The real fun, though, is in the iOS app. It's a universal app, which means it runs on the iPad, the iPhone, and the iPod Touch. So it's free. When you first jump into Mac Hash, you'll see a beautiful, clean layout of images on the left and article titles and snippets on the right. Find a story you like, tap on it, and read more. The number of sites aggregated by Mac Hash are too numerous to list. There's maybe like 30 or 40 of them. You can filter out sites if you don't like them through a really, really good preference pane. You can change the font size to make it easier to read, or I suppose to cram more on the page if you're under 40. You can change the refresh interval to control how the flow of stories comes in as well. If the ads get on your nerves, they do sort of run around and jump around a bit, you can pay a measly $1.99 to have them removed. But let's get to the good part. Mac Hash also has podcasts. It's not quite as obvious as I might like. You scroll past all the news sites to get down to the podcasts. The good news is that the NoSillaCast is in the listing on Mac Hash. Just like the news articles, you get the synopsis, tap on that, and you get to where you can open the enclosure. I suggested to the developer, Ryan, that perhaps play might be a bit more intuitive to normal people than open and closure, which is the technically correct phrase. He seemed to think that might be a good idea. Either way, you can play the podcast right from that window. What could be easier than that? Luckily, because of my practicing for the blindfolded presentations, I was able to test MacHash for accessibility, and guess what? It worked really, really well. The actual play button on the iPhone wasn't recognized by VoiceOver, but the link below it did work to play the episode. I asked Ryan how hard was it to make it work so well under VoiceOver, and here's what he wrote. Really glad to hear you like MacHash. I'm pleased to hear that the accessibility functionality works so well. I actually did not do too much extra work to make it accessible, so that is a testament to Apple's effort on making that so seamless and easy to incorporate. I will make sure that I get that play button fixed. Since I'm using a web-based player, I should be able to fix that rather quickly without having to go through the usual app approval process. So, Apple rocks and Ryan rocks. Anyway, enough talking about it. Head on over to MacHash.com or iTunes to try out MacHash for all your Mac news and podcasts all in one great app.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
This week's dumb question comes from a good friend of mine and a good friend of the show, listener Lynn. Here's what she asks. Is there a way to lock an app in the dock so it can't be poofed without extra effort? Our neighbor has actually done this twice this week, so it'd be helpful if some trick was there to make sure a little shake doesn't remove it. I showed her how to restore it, but that didn't go smoothly as either. I found a utility called Dock Lock and instructions on about removing access to change the dock under parental controls. I think the controls approach is a bit much. Do you have any experience with apps that do this? It has to work on an old PowerPC iMac running 10.5. I gotta tell you, Lynn, it never occurred to me to look for an app to fix this problem that my in-laws have too. Remember the whole story about the printer icon disappearing from the dock? Well, I did some Googling, and I found an article on Lifehacker that pointed to a dashboard widget called Dock Unlocker from JoseLopez650.tk. There's a link in the show notes. I downloaded Dock Unlocker, and when I opened the zip file, it gave me a dashboard application. It's been so long since I installed one of those, I hardly remembered what to do. I double-clicked on it, and it opened a dashboard asking me if I wanted to keep it. Ah, yes, I remember that now. Anyway, once I said yes, I had two lock icons, one unlocked and one locked. So I clicked on the lock icon, and instantly dashboard disappeared, and I was back to my regular Mac desktop. It just kind of went boom. Well, I then tried to drag an application out of the dock, and it would not work. I went back to dashboard, clicked the unlock icon, and instantly it put me back to my normal desktop again. I dragged an application out of the dock, and it poofed just like it was supposed to. Anyway, the developer did not say whether it works under all versions of OS X or if it's just a Lion app. I'm not really sure. Or possibly a Snow Leopard app. I'm not really sure. It's probably going to work okay because I think if it works in Snow Leopard, it works in Leopard, and it was published in early 2011. So hopefully that'll work for you. Let me know if it does or if you run into problems. Well, this week when Steve poured a bottle of water on my MacBook Pro right into the keyboard on Saturday, while I was waiting to find out its fate, I figured I'd better start getting things sorted onto a new MacBook. I keep one just for this kind of situation. I started by downloading the Feeder and going into LastPass to find my license code. Done. Feeder is essential because that's where I create all the show notes, of course. They were about 80% complete at that stage. You may remember my buddy Ron wrote me a tiny little automation script that I can run with three keystrokes that backs up my feeder file to Dropbox. Of course, having Dropbox already on the spare computer was handy, so I just imported that file right back into Feeder, and I hadn't lost a bit since the night before. But as I started working on the show notes, I hit H3, which should drop in the Heading 3 tag for a new section of the show notes. But nothing happened. That's when I realized that I did not have Text Expander on this machine. Quick download of the application from smilesoftware.com, back to LastPass to grab my license code. What a lifesaver LastPass is, and I'm up and running. But I don't have my snippets. But of course I really do, because Text Expander supports Dropbox syncing. All I had to do was open Text Expander, click on Preferences, then on the sync icon. You get three choices: no sync, Dropbox sync, or mobile me. Good thing I wasn't using Mobile Me. Anyway, I chose Dropbox, and it asked me whether I wanted to replace the ones in Dropbox on my first sync or to import the ones that were on Dropbox. Of course, in this case, I chose the latter. Also notice a lovely selection box that allows you to share your snippets on your local network with other devices, like your iPhone, iPod, and iPad using the app Text Expander Touch. Syncing took the blink of an eye since it's actually just a text file. It's super teeny even with 2,930 snippets in my library. Okay, I know I'm crazy about Text Expander, but I'm not really that crazy. Most of those are from the Tidbits library. So the moral of the story is that the first thing I need is my podcast authoring tool Feeder. And as soon as that starts, I start to type in it. The second tool I require is Text Expander. Seriously, it's that important to me. I will not use a computer without it. If you haven't bought Text Expander yet, head on over to smilesoftware.com and download the free trial. And then when you break down and buy it, be sure to tell them you heard about it on the NoSillaCast. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And we have venerable guests that we've had on the show quite a few times. We have Nightwise from Nightwise.com. How are you today?
I am doing fine. I have absolutely no idea what venerable means, but if it's it's got to be good.
I'm sure it means respected in your field or something like that.
It's like a cardinal imperative, or was it?
oh, integration cardinalities.
Right? It's an integration cardinality that I am here.
Definitely. Well, I asked you to be on the show for a very specific reason because you made a very startling announcement. And I'm going to tease that out a little bit, but I want to talk about how you got to where you are today. So you're a self-proclaimed slider. You want technology to work for you. And because of that, you've been maybe not embracing the whole Apple iOS subculture.
I'm a cross-platform slider, which means that I want my technology to work for me regardless of what brand it is. So I'm not really a fan of closed systems, and I would like to have my stuff work for me across systems because I'm on Linux, I'm on a Mac, I don't have any Windows machines in the house, but you know, I do tend to be on Windows machine from time to time. And I want the things that I want to do to work just, you know, everywhere. If I'm on a Mac, I want to be able to access my data on a Windows machine or somewhere else or on a Linux machine and vice versa. So no matter on what location that I am, what system that I'm on and what operating system that I'm on, I want to be able to do my thing. And even beyond that, let the technology work for me.
So you're not actually anti any of these technologies, really. Well, maybe anti-Windows a little bit, but that's just normal. But
I'm not anti-Windows. I'm just a little bit allergic to it. I get a rash.
Exactly.
Vista gives me a really bad rash.
Let's just not even say words like that. This is a family-friendly show, Nightwise.
Okay.
So does this translate into your handheld devices?
It did for the longest time. I must say, I've drunk the Apple Kool-Aid when the second generation iPod came out, and it was like the real Steve Jobs drug pushing deal where they give you the iPod first, and then you roll into the Mac Mini. And I rolled into an iBook, and then I rolled into a Mac Mini, and it all got worse from there. So I really am one of those junkies that rolled into the whole Apple experience with the iPod. So I've always been an Apple mobile user. And when the iPod Touch came out, I did start to use iOS. I'm on my second iPod Touch at the moment, and we've got about two iPads in the house. So I'm not really anti the iOS story, but the walled garden annoys me, so I'm constantly putting ladders against the walls and climbing over them and digging holes underneath the walls and getting my stuff in, trying to break out those walled gardens.
Why does the walled garden bother you?
Because my stuff's on the other side of the wall. Because I want freedom! I want freedom! I don't mind a walled garden as long as it has a door. And if it doesn't have a door, I yell freedom and I make a door. And
Like what Bart and I were talking about, that we love the Mac App Store, but we also, one of the things we like is there's a door in that walled garden, right? We can still go outside and get what we want.
There you go. I mean, you can install like the gazillion apps that are in the App Store easily. But if you want to install the gazillionth and one app, you can go outside and you can shop in another store and you can still download it. And that's one of the things that kind of bothers me with iOS. I mean, I don't have anything to complain about. There are gazillions, plural, amounts of apps in the iOS store, and I'll find one that does what I want it to do. But then there's Apple's waggly finger that says, no, you can't use a button to do that, and you have to play by the rules. And that sometimes annoys me.
Well, so what don't you find in the iTunes store? I mean, there's enough fart apps, right?
Yes. It has been a valuable and very important chapter in my life to go through and find the right fart app. That is really important. It is a question of functionality, timing, sound, panache, ambience. So that's really important. And there are plenty of fart apps to choose from. But, you know, sometimes you want to do things that don't work yet. Like, for example, sync your music. Until iOS 5, when Steve Jobs finally introduced the functionality just to shut me up, I had been moaning and complaining about the fact that here's this wonderful device and it has Bluetooth and it's Wi-Fi and it's as powerful as the computer that I owned 5 years ago, and you need a freaking stupid cable to make it work.
Ah, so you like the Wi-Fi syncing now.
The Wi-Fi syncing is the retarded version of the solution that I have come up with. It's not bad, but it's extremely slow.
It's Wi-Fi. Of course it's slow.
You should see my solution. I've been working on this solution where I put my files up on a Linux server on an SSH directory and use GoodReader to sync them over.
Ooh, and that's faster?
It's lightning fast, and it's encrypted. Oh. So even if I'm not at home, I use GoodReader to sync over a directory that has audio files and video files on it to my iPad or iPod, wherever I am. And it doesn't need to be plugged into a wall outlet for some bizarre reason.
By the way, you don't actually have to have your devices plugged into wall outlets. If you want it to automatically sync, it needs to be plugged into a wall outlet. But you can have it just sitting on the bathroom counter and hits Wi-Fi sync right now, and it does it.
Yeah. No, yeah, okay. I'll give you that. But it is slow.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go. You need to VPN into your house to do it when you're not at home.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't do any crazy stuff like that. Last time I tried to set up a VPN server was when you broke my one laptop per child. It's still sitting there, sadly, not functioning.
I will come down to the States to fix it. I promise.
When we go on that bike ride, right?
It will be my excuse. I have to go to LA to fix a laptop. So I have to go to Orange County to fix a laptop. Someday, get me a Honda.
Someday we'll do that. All right. Yes. So here you are not liking the walled garden, but you've kind of got your toes dipped in the water with the iPod Touch.
And the iPads.
And now you've actually experimented with a lot of different phones, right? With Android phones?
Yep.
That seems more up your alley. It seems more like your personality to like Android.
Yeah, I do like Android. Android's a little bit like Linux. It's open. There's a lot of software out there, and you can do a lot of geeky things. And I've had several Android phones up to now. 2 years ago, I think, or long, yeah, 2010, somewhere. I was at the verge of buying an iPhone 4. Literally had the money in my hand, walked up to the counter.
Oh, I remember this. And they had a little flyer.
That said, the Galaxy S1.
Uh-huh.
And I went into a complete crisis of faith. I'm talking about a minister that thinks, should I continue with my work with the church or should I become a pole dancer in a strip club? It was that kind of crisis. I mean, Android or iOS, what do I do? So
which one is your ministry with the church and which one's the porn pole dancer?
Android's the porn pole dancer.
Ah, okay, okay. All right.
So I really had a hard time. So I asked my community, what should I do? Now, if you're a cross-platform slider and you have a podcast, you have a cross-platform community. So asking them what you should do is like declaring civil war in that community. That was really interesting to do. It would be like Gaddafi coming out and saying like, hey, dudes, why don't you figure out what you want with me? Everybody's fighting. It was very interesting. But let's just say I bought a big jar of glitter and went for the pole dancing. And I got the Galaxy S1.
Where's my Photoshop? I need to make a picture of this.
So I got my Galaxy S1.
Uh-huh. And you loved it.
And I hated it.
Oh, I thought you loved it.
I did. I did. It was a wonderful device. It just had Alzheimer's. You know, you'd be working on it, and it would be going like, la-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da. So it would just stop for a couple of seconds.
Ooh.
And that was because it was a little premature. It was Samsung's first phone. It was pretty light. It had an awesome screen. It had swipe. It had all kinds of software. It was fantastic. It was like, here were the iOS kids, you know, with Steve Jobs as the head minister standing on the playground saying like, you all play nice now. And then we had like the Android playground where we had like ponies and balloons and
they were pooping all over, but nobody cared.
Yeah, and bazookas. We had like anything.
and BB guns.
Like, yeah, you, no.
Could shoot your eye out, and it was okay.
Yeah, it was that. You had plenty of eyes to go. You just root another one. So it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of apps out there, but the Galaxy S1 was kind of premature, so it drove me nuts. Well, it drove me nuts, which was a big word. It drove Niana nuts.
Oh, that's right, because you got two of them, right?
No, I got one of them, but she got so fed up at me going like, oh, this phone, this and this phone, that. And then I got an HTC, and then things got better.
So what operating system for Android were you running on the first Galaxy?
I think 1.5 or something.
Is that Froyo or...?
No, way before Froyo.
Oh, way before. Oh, wow.
I think it was named after a dinosaur or something. Android 1.3 or something. Really old. Okay.
The pterodactyl version.
There were parts of the code that were just, you know, written like rock drawings, and some of the binaries were just really fossilized. So it was old. They didn't have coders. They had archaeologists. That's how old it was. So, but it was cool, but it wasn't ready yet. But when I went to HTC, things got better because HTC had tweaked Android to work more favorably with their phones.
And is HTC the one that puts the Sense UI thingy on it?
Yeah. HTC has Sense, and Samsung has TouchWiz, which at the time would be my source of great joy and great frustration at the same time. So it was really – I had a really love-hate relationship with the Samsung Galaxy S1 because hardware-wise, it was an absolute dream. Price-wise, it was a dream. It was a little bit cheaper than the iPhone, but still a dream. But software-wise, it just wasn't done yet.
Yeah.
So I've been on Android for a whole year now, almost 2 years now. Niana went to Android. That went fine. She loved it. I've gotten a Desire HD since, which is a fantastic little — it's like a plasma TV with a SIM card. I've gotten a Desire Z, which is like an anvil with a keyboard. Very sturdy, but extremely heavy. The difference is if you take a Desire HD, which is almost all screen, and you drop it, you break the glass. If you drop a Desire HD on the floor, you break the glass. If you drop a Desire Z on the floor, you break the floor. So it was really nice to play around with some of them. And I've enjoyed Android very much. And the one reason I didn't go for an iPhone, or out of principle didn't go for an iPhone, was because of the price. Here in Belgium, you have to buy them without a contract.
Yeah. So you can sell them for a lot too, though, right?
Yeah,
you're
sure,
very good
yeah,
at selling things.
I am. I tried my mother-in-law twice. Doesn't work. That's the only thing. Doesn't work. eBay really makes a big fuss about it every time I put her on eBay.
sense of humor whatsoever.
No. Neither has my mother-in-law about those things. So that's really weird. We buy an iPod Touch, last generation iPod Touch, 32 gigabytes for €300, which
wow.
is about,
okay,
I don't know, $5,000 at the rates at the moment. I think it's like $400 or something. We buy an iPhone, a 32 gigabyte iPhone, for, let me guess here, I have to take a, I think the iPhone 4GS is $630.
And that's for the 16 gig?
That's for the 32 gig as well.
Okay.
So let me check.
We pay, I think, $300 for the middle one.
I think, let me guess. Apple,
but then again, we're in indentured servitude at that point.
Yes.
To get out of it, you have to pay $175. So you would really, it's almost like you have to add that to the price because you're going to change yours in less than a year anyway, right?
Let me put it straight. The 32 gigabyte iPhone 4GS, which is, okay, it has a faster processor than the last iPod Touch. We got to be honest about that. But is at €759. The 64 gigabyte version is at €879, which is €20 from the price of an iPad.
Jeez.
I don't know what they put in it. I think they put ground unicorn testicles in them or something that makes it so expensive. It's a family.
Okay, let's see. A 32 gig for us is $300, but you got to add $175 because that's your cancellation, and you're going to cancel. So that'd be $475, and you're saying it's like $700 for the 32.
For the 32, it's like €759, €2. Hold on. Here we go. 900.
Oh, those were euros. Oh, good God. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
€985 for an iPhone 4GS. And let me guess, €300, €2. And the iPod Touch, 32 gigabytes, is $389.
Wow. Okay. All right. So it's obvious that you would go Android. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Given your desire to stay out of the walled garden and climb over the walls.
I don't mind the walled garden. I mind the fact that there's an iPod Touch that costs $389. And then there's an iPod Touch with a SIM card that costs $985. I don't understand.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, okay, you got to be excited this week because this last week the Galaxy S2 came out, right?
Oh, man.
Coolest phone on the market.
Absolute brilliance. Absolute brilliance. I've recently obtained press reviewer status in Belgium, which means that some suppliers ship me phones to review, which is nice. So I said to Samsung, I want to have the S2 to review. Yeah, it's been out for a while. I said, I know, but I just want to have it. I want to talk about it because I had the S1. I want to have the S2.
Sure.
And it is absolutely brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant.
Running Ice Cream Sandwich, right? This is the first phone out with the new.
No. That would be the Galaxy Nexus. This isn't. This
oh,
is just this is
I thought
Android.
Okay.
3.2 point. Not even 4.0.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was the one with the
That's the Nexus One. That has an ice cream sandwich.
All right.
But even the Galaxy S2 at, let me give you the correct price, €439, €2. at $569 gives you an 800 by 600 screen, a 1.2 gigahertz processor, Wi-Fi, 8 megapixel camera, and it's an absolute, it's ultra thin. It has a big screen. It feels nice in your hand. It's like a phone from the future. I kid you not. I was amazed at it. It still has some of the quirks that the Galaxy S1 had, but boy, did they deliver. Great phone. Absolute great phone. Really like it.
Cool. So,
I didn't
you're
buy
happy.
It.
What? No. Oh, come on.
Really?
Come on, really?
I sent it back.
Because?
Podmother, I must confess. Forgive me, for I have sinned.
What did you do?
I bought an iPhone 4G.
You mean the 4S?
No, not the 4S. Okay.
There's no such thing as a 4G.
I bought the iPhone 4. I didn't go for the 4S because I think it's overpriced. And I think that if I want to boss a woman around.
You can try Niana, but she'll smack you.
Yeah, I have an aggressive version of Siri downstairs.
And she can take you, so.
Oh, yeah, she can. No, really. I here in Belgium, we can buy the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S. And the iPhone 4S is like even more expensive.
Right.
For absolutely no reason. Let's be honest. Siri is nice, but after about, you know.
Cooler camera. Yeah. It's got image stabilization stuff.
Yeah, but for that kind of money, you buy two butt-rocking SLR cameras. We got to be honest. I mean,
yeah, actually, that's a good point. You're talking about it's more than double what an SLR costs. That's good.
Yeah, really, for 985 euros, yeah. I can buy myself a camera that makes me look like a freaking paparazzi.
I think technically you can buy a car for that much, can't you?
We got to be honest. I mean, yeah. And here's Siri. Yeah, right. It has Siri. And Siri's like nice for like 3 weeks or something. And then you're over it. Then you start going like, okay, talking to my phone in the middle of a crowded bus or train car might not be very cool anymore. It's kind of dorky. And it is. Especially when Siri don't understand you, Siri. And then, you know, Siri, what's the capital of France? That doesn't make you cool. That makes you an idiot. Everybody knows what the capital of France is. For crying out loud. Yes, you can
okay.
ask.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I would contend that it's possible that it's actually useful or will become more and more useful. But I'm with you. I did not buy a 4S myself. I stuck with the 4. But it's not Android.
I know.
You willingly walked in and allowed them to lock the door behind you.
Yes.
How could you?
How could I? Well, first of all,
I've lost all respect for you, Nightwise.
Oh,
no more freedom.
I know. Wait. I'm not done yet. I decided to go for an iPhone 4. First, because I could get one pretty cheaply. I've got which didn't give me a choice as to the color, so I have a white one.
Oh, boys can't have white phones.
Don't you start too.
You could put a Spider-Man case on it or something though, right?
Yeah, right. That would make me mature. A Spider-Man case on a white iPhone.
Hey,
right.
hey, Steve's got an Iron Man case on his phone. Don't be mocking the comic book character iPhone cases.
I just saw the Green Lantern. Don't talk to me about mocking. I mean, I think Hollywood's doing a fairly good job at that already. But yeah, it's a white 32 gigabyte one because I wanted storage.
Okay.
The reason is I wanted to download some audiobooks from the iTunes store, which I really want to listen to because they are important for this stuff I do at work. And because of some projects that I have running, I thought, like, you know, I just need the convenience of just downloading, buying those things on the iTunes store and then just having them without a hassle. Now, I could do that perfectly with my old system where I used GoodReader and sync them over and stuff. But then I would be carrying an Android phone that's mine, an Android phone for work, and an iPod Touch and an iPad and probably also my MacBook Pro along to work.
And which, a bottle of Advil for your back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you could, if you would, you know, if you wanted to mug me, you just, you know, put a big magnet in front of me and I'll probably give you everything. So I thought, you know, I actually want the convenience of the iPod Touch when it comes to, you know, my playlists, my podcasts and stuff like that and stuff like Goodreader. And I want to have my private phone with me. So what's an iPod Touch with a SIM card? It's actually an iPhone. So I thought, like, you know, I'll do the iPhone. I'll play with it and I'll see you. But it was really hard for me because here in Belgium, I've got friends and relatives, and the dumbest ones have an iPhone. Really, people who are technological morons have an iPhone. I've talked to people who've got an iPhone. I said, like, yeah, what speeds do you have for mobile internet? I don't have mobile internet. I don't have mobile internet. Hello? They don't have mobile internet. They just use it for calling. Why? Because it's cool. And those were also a lot of people that kept me back. And I went like, oh boy, really? But I decided.
So the fact that morons had them is why you didn't want to get one.
The fact that they were overpriced, that was one of the major principles. Not because I don't want to spend the money on Apple hardware. It's worth it. But it was just a little bit too much, you know. It wasn't – the value for money wasn't there. You know, as I said, you know, $985.
Sure.
Seriously, for a phone? Huh? Okay. I thought, like, that's, like, just too much. That's a premium. We're paying to be hip. And then you've got, yeah, the technological morons that don't know that you have to plug it into a computer and that have never heard of a data card. They have one, too, which really makes me frown. I go, like, oh, boy, dude. And then there's, of course, the walled garden that I had, like, yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm a geek and I need Android. But the cool thing is you can tinker with Android. But the downside is you can tinker with Android.
So and you can sort of have to tinker with Android a little bit,
yeah,
from what I
you
understand.
Have to tinker. And at some point, I draw the line where I say, okay, this is me working for technology and this is technology working for me. Me spending two evenings getting files synced over automatically to my Droid and rooting it and God knows what.
if you say it just works, I'm going to puke.
But with the closed garden, it works for me.
Right,
But I have hacked I went into the garden, yeah. And then I hacked everything outside the garden. So what I've actually done is I've hacked a copy of Lion into a virtual machine and put that virtual machine on my Linux server. So I now have a virtual hacked Macintosh Lion distribution with a server on it running as a virtual machine on my Linux box, which runs on PC hardware. So I've actually – I walked
my
into
head
the
hurts.
Garden. Yeah, I just walked into the garden and hacked the house instead of, you know, walking out of the house and hacking into the garden. So
what does that do for you? The phone isn't hacked.
No, the phone isn't hacked, but the phone thinks that there's a Lion server in my house that has iTunes on it, that syncs it over wirelessly, and that does all of the things it wants to do. It's my VPN endpoint, but it's the Mac that doesn't exist. I know Steve would not approve, and I don't care, because I can, because it works. I have a copy of Lion, so I haven't downloaded an illegal copy. I still have a copy of Lion, and I bought the copy of Lion server at the App Store, so I'm legit.
There you go.
But the fact that Apple says you have to buy it in, you have to run it on Apple hardware, I say...
Fooey.
Yeah, I was looking for the family
the
safe
word.
Justin Byrne would use another word. I would use that word as well.
We'll go with fooey.
Fooey.
So what do you think of the phone?
When I got it and I drove home, I thought, like, damn, I'm going to regret this. The S2 was awesome. But after a couple of days, I know that I look at it and I say, this is a Mac. It just...
you can say it. I won't puke.
Get your barf bags ready. It just works. It does. Okay, I don't
We're
have
gonna
some
call this episode Confessions of a cross-platform slider.
Yeah. I will see it as my mission to do as many things with it that I'm not supposed to and see how I can peek over the walls and dig under the walls to get it working. But in the end, no, it's not the most exciting phone that I've owned. And it's not as exciting as the Desire HD, and it's surely not as exciting as the Galaxy S2, but it just works. And sometimes that's enough. So I will take my quest on the other side. I will fight other windmills and continue my hacking my Macs that don't exist onto PC hardware I'm not supposed to projects.
All right. Well, it sounds like I was shocked to hear this, but I'm glad you've confessed, and I think that's important, part of your growth here. I expect in 6 months you're suddenly going to be on something else, though.
Of course. Niana's on a Windows phone for the moment.
Ooh, Windows Phone 7?
Yep.
She liking it?
Yeah. It's the phone for your mom.
Oh, don't say that.
No, it is.
No, don't ever. Well,
not
what are you going to say?
Mom.
It's so
your mom's even too geeky for that.
You know how I hate that. So easy, your mother can do it.
Okay.
Oh, I can't believe you just said that. I'm going to scrap this whole recording right now. That is one of my biggest pet peeves is when people say, "So easy, your mother can do it."
No, it's the phone for your cousin that just wants to do Facebook and Twitter.
It
looks good. It does what it does well. Niana says, I have mail. I've got Twitter. I've got Facebook. It doesn't check the accounts on the background just like Android does. So I have to check them manually. It's not an exciting phone, but it kind of works. There are like 5 applications on there that you can install. They have an ecosystem of about 10 applications. So if you don't want to tinker at all,
there's
then
a good
you buy
one.
Windows phone. Really, if you go like, oh, I need a car. Oh, yes, says the garage keeper, the shopkeeper. What kind of car do you want? Well, just one that drives. Okay, here's a Windows phone. That's
all
Windows.
Right. Well, before Chris Ashley has a stroke listening to this, I'm gonna actually cut us off from that because that's a whole new plot line. But yeah. I'm glad you were able to come on the show with us, especially with all the 48 times I changed the time on you there.
That's okay.
All right. Why don't you plug your show? Where can people find you on the web?
www.nightwise.com. That's KNIGHTWISE.com. And by the time this interview airs, we have possibly aired KWTV 0032, where I absolutely fall in love with the Galaxy S2.
And right. Then we'll come back and watch that and then listen to this.
Yeah.
All right, Nightwise. Really appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, you can tell I always love talking to Nightwise. He's so entertaining and yet has this really unique view on technology. No religion, just about making technology work for you. If you haven't subscribed to his media feed, check it out at nightwise.com and be sure to follow him on Twitter at Nightwise. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills. Blue Mango Learning with Screen Steps and Clarify, and don't forget all of the fantastic products over at smilesoftware.com. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions, you know, just like listener Lynn did, and send them to me by emailing at allison@podfeet.com. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Podfeet, and go circle me up over on Google+. We're having a lot of fun over there as well. Speaking of fun, if you want to have fun in the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.